There are a lot of verses that religious people can't handle, but one of the biggest ones I found that they just can't wrap their heads around is Romans 5:21, where sin increases, grace super exceeds. Now, of course, the one thing that they panic over is sin increasing, because they still haven't figured out that Jesus Christ took away the sin of the world and that sin is no longer an issue. Now, you will still reap what you sow in this life. If you sin in this life, you'll reap consequences. If you rob a bank and get shot, well, it's your own fault. You broke the law and there are consequences. But as far as God is concerned, all consequences are off the table, because sin is a great opportunity for God to exercise his favorite thing. Actually, he has two favorite things. These are just a few of his favorite things: love and grace. He cannot exercise love without unlovable people, because the love of God, the Greek word there is agape, means love without a consideration of the worthiness of the object. So the love of God does not consider the worthiness of the object. In fact, the unworthiness of the object gives God the opportunity to show off love. Likewise, sin and grace. Sin gives God the opportunity to exercise grace. Grace goes crazy when sin shows up. It's a feeding fest. It's like throwing seal meat to a shark. When you throw sin to grace, it comes to the kill. It just eats it up and it loves it and it makes it hungrier. But you tell religious people this truth, the first thing you do is you give them Romans 5:21. I mean, you introduce this, I should say, by saying, well, what do you do, religious person, with Romans 5:21? Of course, they don't know what it says. So you quote it to them, where sin increases, grace super exceeds. Their heads explode. And the weird thing is they actually start arguing against it. Mind you, you're introducing this by saying, this is Romans 5:21. In other words, what I'm telling you is in the Bible. Reminds me of the time I told a guy that God created evil. And he said, that's crazy. What do you mean God created evil? It's impossible. Evil comes from Satan. I said, well, it may come indirectly from Satan, but God created it as a contrast to good. I'll have to see that in the King James Version if you expect me to believe that. So I showed him Isaiah 45 verse 7 in the King James Version. He looked at it and he said, I don't believe that. What are you going to do at that point? So you're introducing this amazing concept that you'll only find in Paul's gospel. You'll only find this where sin increases, grace super exceeds. You'll only find it in Paul's gospel. You won't find it in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, or John, and you certainly won't find it in the Hebrew scriptures. Where sin increases, the weight of the rocks that they threw at you super exceeded. The law of Moses was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This is something new. This is something completely apart from the law of Moses. This is why you'll hear me always say that there's the gospel of the circumcision, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, and there's the gospel of the uncircumcision, where sin increases, grace super exceeds. And the way you find out that people don't believe this verse, it doesn't register with them, because they are fixated. They are saturated because they go to church. They're saturated with the law. And we know that churches love the law. Because as I told you yesterday, churches survive. They need you to be constantly vexed by sin. They need sin to be problematic so that you can come to them. They can give you your daily dose or your weekly dose of penance. I was raised in the Catholic Church where sin increased. The number of prayers I had to say super exceeded. Okay, but no, that's not this. That's not this. This is so radical that people are shocked that you're quoting scripture and you almost have to show it to them. But like this guy to whom I showed the verse Isaiah 45:7, he looked it in the eye and he said, I don't believe that. So I tell people this verse and this is what they always say. And let this be instructive to you, because now I relish these opportunities. I look forward to people saying this. This is what they say. Wait a minute. You're telling me that I can go out and like murder people and grace will increase. You're telling me that I can go out and rape a 4-year-old girl and grace will increase. This is your opportunity. This is your great opportunity to look them in the eye and say, yes, yes, you got it. That's exactly what I'm saying. At which time they are offended. They are upset. They're mad. They can't believe it. Because it's not part of their world. This tells you something about them. Let me explain to you what I mean by that. Someone who is shocked by the fact that where sin increases, grace super exceeds. And I didn't make this up, by the way. It's Romans 5:21. Where sin increases, grace super exceeds. This was a new revelation. No one had ever heard this before Romans 5:21. This is why you must separate Paul's writings from the writings of all the other writers of the scriptures. Even Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Jesus didn't elaborate on such levels of grace because they were as yet unknown. He saved them. God had all this grace in his heart the whole time, but he saved it through the eons of time in order to unveil it to Paul, who at the time he received it was Saul, a rabid, crazy Pharisee on his way to Damascus, Syria, to kill people who believed in Jesus Christ. God apprehended him, his vilest enemy, and Paul says, the grace of God overwhelmed me. So this is a guy that's telling you this in Romans 5:21. But people who are shocked, they always think they're going to come up with some crazy sin like, okay, that I've never heard of. Like, you mean to tell me I can rob a bank? I said, yeah, you can rob a bank and grace. I don't recommend you rob a bank, and I'm not telling you that here. But yes, you could rob a bank and grace will super exceed. Then they up the ante. Well, what if I murder somebody? You're telling me grace super exceeds? Yes, grace super exceeds. Like this, I didn't write this. This is a principle where sin increases. What sin are you possibly going to bring me? It always comes down to raping someone. Oh, that's the go-to sin. They rape, and it's usually a young girl, like a 4-year-old girl. One of these days, somebody's going to come up to me about raping a 1-year-old. I know it's coming. Or a fetus. They're going to think they come up with a sin that Jesus Christ didn't deal with at the cross. I know this is shocking. I can't help that, can I? So they're mad at it. This is what it tells you about them, that they are still convinced that missing the mark, that is, sinning, will wreck God's love. Because to them, it's all conditional. Remember I told you months ago, Christians are stuck at Mount Sinai. They have Mount Sinai heads. They are absolutely tied with rope to the foot of Mount Sinai. They're still in accord with the Mosaic law. That's right. That thing that Paul called a dispensation of death and condemnation. They're still there. And they dress it up with grace talk. They dress it up with salvation talk. They dress it up with all these ornaments. But it's like hanging ornaments on the Charlie Brown Christmas tree. The Charlie Brown Christmas tree is dead. It's decrepit. It's broken. No matter how many shiny baubles, bangles, or beads you put on that thing, it's a sick tree. So they absolutely don't believe it. And the fact that they're offended at it tells you this, that they actually believe that their behavior keeps them in the game. Their behavior keeps God liking them. And that tells you another thing. That tells you that they think that their behavior got them into it in the first place. See how this works. If they think that their sin is so bad, or could become so bad that it could get them out of salvation, then it's their good behavior that got them into salvation. And that's exactly what they believe. And in the case of most Christians, the good behavior of this context is what? You know, free will. They stopped sinning long enough to believe in Jesus Christ. That was a righteous act that got them saved. It's all based on behavior, behavior, behavior. The truth is, and Paul is using a shocking statement here to blow you out of the entire concept that anything depends on behavior. 2 Timothy 1:9, Paul says, we're not saved by our behavior. We're not saved by our own acts. And to prove it, he says, here in Romans 5:21, Paul's trying to say something shocking. That maybe it'll hit home to prove to you that salvation is not dependent on acts to get into it, and you can't perform any acts to get out of it. You can't perform any good act to get into it. You can't perform any bad act to get out of it. That's a two-sided coin there. And to prove it, he comes up with a shocking statement. That statement is Romans 5:21, where sin increases, grace super exceeds. Now we get to the classic question in Romans 6:1, which is, since grace super exceeds, every time sin increases, then why not just sin more so that we can get more grace? This is Romans 6:1. Paul deals with this. It's a stupid question to begin with. Well, we want more grace, don't we? So we'll just sin more to get more grace. Paul says, no, may it not be coming to that. Paul doesn't want you to do that. But people think that because the question is asked, why not then sin more? Romans 6:1 follows Romans 5:21. This is the logical question. Oh, I have to say this. Paul says, where sin increases, grace super exceeds. I guess it's kind of a logical question then to say, well, then why don't we keep sinning so that grace can increase? That's Romans 6:1. What then shall we declare? That we may be persisting in sin? That grace should be increasing? Paul said, may it not be coming to that. I'm like, no. But it doesn't kill the principle. Romans 6:1 doesn't invalidate Romans 5:21, the verse that came right before it. But Romans 6:1, at least, I'll give it credit for this, it at least acknowledges the truth of Paul's previous statement. Someone who says, well, let's sin more so that grace can increase, at least I'll give them this. They actually believed and absorbed, they absorbed Romans 5:21. Which is more than can be said for the questions of people who read Romans today. Very few people believe Romans 5:21 to even ask Romans 6:1. They can't get past the fact that if they sin more, they're not going to blow up their own salvation. In fact, the grace of God which saved them in the first place, unbeknownst to them, is just going to rise to the occasion and overwhelm them. So, let me say this. I'll tell you this. If you are not getting this objection, that is, well, then why don't we just sin more so that more grace can come? If you're not getting that objection, then you're not teaching Paul. Only people who are teaching accurately concerning sin and the death of the old humanity, the death of Christ for sin, that it actually worked. Only if you're teaching that does this objection even come up. Mainstream religious teachers, pastors, and whatnot, they don't even get this objection. Nobody ever says this to them. Nobody ever raises their hand from the congregation and shouts at the pulpit, are we supposed to, what are you saying? We should just go ahead and sin so that grace should increase? They never get this. I'm constantly getting this. And the fact that I am assures me that I'm teaching the right message. Because yes, my message invites this objection. If your message does not invite this objection, you don't have the right message. If nobody's ever challenging you, because why would somebody challenge a pastor who says, where sin increases, you're going to go to hell quicker. Where sin increases, you have to say more prayers to try to get out of it. Where sin increases, you have to go to more men's conferences, or you have to go see Joyce Meyer, or you have to go to a Billy Graham tape on YouTube, or you have to buy my latest book, How to Not Sin, or you have to go to a revival meeting. That's their answer to sin. So that mindset where sin increases, condemnation increases, and that's where they are. They're locked down on Mount Sinai. If that's your message, then there's no way you could invite the objection. You see what I'm saying? No one would say, well, why don't we just go ahead and sin like crazy so that sin could increase? Because nobody from the pulpit in Christianity is saying what Paul is saying in Romans 5:21. It's so counterintuitive. They're so mired in sin. They're so in love with the old creation. They don't even realize that there is a new creation. And so they're in love with a corpse. They're in love with the old humanity. And they love fighting it, which is strange. I don't like it at all. And I gave it up years ago. And since then, I've become a really good person. Because it settles you down to understand this truth. This truth, again, I said this yesterday, has the opposite effect that carnal human beings think it has. It just reveals the hearts of the people who can't believe this verse. It reveals their hearts. They're projecting on you their own problems. Classic case of projection. Because if they thought in their minds that they had carte blanche. I mean, carte blanche is like where sin increases, grace super exceeds. There's no wider card than that. You have complete freedom to sin your brains out and you can't lose your salvation. If they even thought that was true for a second, it is true. But I mean, if they took that into themselves personally, they think they're so rotten and they know themselves so well that they know that they would take advantage of it like little rats. In a maze, going after the cheese. Oh, I'm free. I can do anything I want. Oh, a rat that finds himself outside of the maze. Oh, the rat is comforted in the maze. Yes, rats are comforted in a maze or on a little wheel spinning around in their cage. That's actually a nice environment for them. They get in this habit of being enslaved. And so if they were freed by God, oh, geez, they wouldn't know how to handle it, and they would go crazy. They would sin like mad people, so they think. And so they assume that you're doing that. They assume that because you believe this, that you're a sinning machine. I'm not a sinning machine. In fact, this truth calms me down so much and makes me love God so much that I don't want to sin. I don't want to sin against a God who's that gracious to me. How's that? The truth that you can sin like crazy and not come into God's disfavor actually makes you not want to sin that much. I don't want to sin at all. And I don't sin much. I mean, I missed the mark, of course, but you know, I'm very careful about it. I'm careful about it because I don't have to be. If God's telling me I have to be careful about it, there's Romans chapter 7. That's what the law will produce indignation. That's the verse right before Romans 5:21. That's a whole other ball game. It's a whole other video. Romans 5:20, the law came so that the transgressions would increase. Yeah. So if law makes transgressions increase, because human beings don't like to be told what to do, and if you put a law in front of somebody, they'll rebel against it, then the lack of the law will have the opposite effect. It's only logical. Grace has the opposite effect. The freedom of Christ. Have you ever heard that story? I've heard a couple stories during the Civil War. A good man would go out and buy slaves. And he would buy the slaves in order to free them. So he buys the slaves, and the slaves are like, oh, their heads down. Oh, we have an owner, a new owner, and oh, what's he going to be like? This is scary or whatever. And they get to the slave's home, and he says, well, you can go. You're free. I bought you in order to free you. What? They're so astounded, so happy, so joyful that they actually want to serve the person who freed them. And they don't want to leave. They've never met anybody so loving as to spend this gigantic amount of money to free them. Jesus Christ spent a gigantic amount of money, sweat, blood, tears, entered the death state to free us. It's real. It's not freedom in name only. It's not an experiment. This is not a false front where you look at the freedom and you probe it and you find out, I knew there was a catch. That's what you get in church. They talk freedom. They talk grace. They talk you're liberated. Then you find out, no, you're one sin away from screwing everything up. But when you find out that Christ actually did liberate you, and he says, you're free to go. Nothing you can do can screw this up. You want to follow him. You want to see what else this crazy grace person would have to say.